Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, 30th July, recording at 8:34 p.m. British Summer Time. Well, being Friday's audio, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the four main asset classes that I cover. Starting with global stock markets, on a very long-term view, the best prospects for capital appreciation, in my view, by far, are the Asian emerging markets led by India, China, Thailand, and Indonesia. Of those four, India and China are destined to be economic superpowers over the next quarter of a century or perhaps less. As far as Thailand and Indonesia are concerned, they benefit enormously from supplying commodities to the developing world and the developed world. And in the case of Thailand, it has emerged rapidly under basically good governance. And governance will remain a key issue for all emerging stock markets. Now, emerging economies, I should say. Now, next best behind those big four, in my view, would be, say, South American emerging markets. But the key factor, the key variable, is what I've already mentioned, will be governance. And we could also add Russia because of its many natural resources. My supply inelasticity theme, and of course by that I mean goods that where the supply cannot be increased dramatically, are most likely to see the biggest price rises as this new overall inflationary cycle that I've described in so many comments slowly unfolds over the next 10 to 15 years. So those are my choices. Now, sadly, none of them looks particularly promising at this moment in time. I don't like the technical action, and one of the big shadows cast over these markets, in as far as the medium term is concerned, is the secular bear market on Wall Street. Now, I reckon that that's going to run for a good many more years, and I also feel that we won't see the actual lows, so we're very unlikely to see the actual lows on Wall Street until we get, we've seen one big sell-off, of course, following the bursting of the 2000 bubble. I think we will see another big sell-off in 2005 and 2006. It may not run that long, but I think it's going to be quite sharp. And there's also a very good chance that we've already seen the highs, this year's highs, prior to that sell-off. And it'll probably be another couple of sell-offs or so before we actually get the lows of the secular bear market cycle on Wall Street. And the lows that I expect will have many of the big companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange trading at single-figure P/E ratios, and the yields will be much, much higher. I would expect them to be a minimum of 5% for the S&P index overall. So clearly that has a long way to go. What am I basing all this on? Historic precedent, which is pretty compelling. And I've written a lot about that in the past. Now, Wall Street will cast, of course, a very big shadow over other developed markets in addition to the emerging markets. The greatest influence will be over the European bourgeois, Canada's and Canada's exchange. Now, these big secular bear markets, as we've already seen with last year's rally, are definitely punctuated by some quite quite brisk recoveries. It's much more of a trading environment. It's not something to be depressed about. It's not something to sell up and go away and never come back again or sit out a decade or whatever. It'll be full of opportunities. But the bottom line reality is that you and I can only deal with what the markets provide. And so we have to recognize what's going on. And it's best if we're students of market history, and I know that most of you certainly are, and I remain very much a student of market history, and through our reading and research, we fit the pieces together for this big picture. But right now, tactically in this environment, I feel it's a very good time, as I've been saying for most of the year, to have a lot of cash, to be accumulating cash. And I would want to be also, I'm more inclined to be selling stock markets than buying in here for the most part. Now, as far as the current, very short-term outlook, I know it's a big long-term view, but it's give a very short-term wrap before moving on to government bonds. I do feel that stock markets want a rally in here. We've seen the U.S. indices and the European indices fall down to previous lows or a little bit below, and then lose downside momentum, get some upside dynamics. So they do want to rally in here, but can they test the upper side of this year's trading ranges, let alone get meaningful gains above those levels in line with some of the election year forecasts that we have all read? Well, I think we could certainly rally a little bit further, but I don't have big hopes for a retest of the highs. It's not impossible by any means within a trading range. Once people see the lows of a range hold, they immediately set their sights on the opposite side of the range. In other words, if it can't go down, it'll go back up and test the upper region, is the way that thinking often works. But why do I think that's less likely to occur this time around? Well, three big letters, OIL, oil. And then, of course, we also have the rising interest rate cycle, but the cost of crude oil continues to push up, and up another $1.05 in here today, and that's, of course, despite all those forecasts from various experts that you've heard over the last few months telling us that oil was soon going to be at $30 a barrel. Well, closed today, spot oil NYME crude at a new high, $43.80. That's right, $43.80, and that's only 5 cents off the high on the day. So, those who are captive investors in markets, how should they actually play it? Well, I'd have as much cash as is the allowable limit, and I would then be way overweight in two sectors. Well, they're basically the supply inelasticity sectors. So I'd be way overweight energy. Have a look at that chart at BP that I posted yesterday, and I would be overweight other natural resources stocks, not going for specy issues, going for the big cap issues. Additionally, if you had anything else in that portfolio, I'd go for high yielders, wherever those may be, and preferably with high covered yields, so you don't have a real risk of a dividend cut. But I do prefer cash overall, and of course, with an interest rate cycle, or cycle of rising interest rates, I should say, the cash yield keeps getting better. Okay, moving on now to global bond markets. Again, I maintain that we also have a secular bear market in this area. The peak for the secular bull market, secular bulls are followed by secular bears and so on. The peak for the last secular bull market was in June 2003, and we are still in the top extension phase, or the rather late stage of this overall top formation development phase. I really, my strategy overall is to short government bonds when their rallies tire, as we've seen recently, favoring the JGBs and the US 30-year Treasury bond contracts. Now, the supply problem for these bonds is enormous. The two governments, the US and Japan, I just mentioned, have huge government deficits, and those deficits are almost certainly going to rise. Point I've mentioned before on so many occasions is if they need to borrow that much, do we really want to lend to them? Well, probably not, in my view, definitely not in my case. And I also feel that the cycle of gradually rising inflation, not in any sort of straight line, but in rolling waves that we're likely to see as a result of all the credit creation that we've seen over the last few years, will weigh quite heavily on long-dated government bond yields. I think there are real opportunities for short selling in the government bonds. Now, when they're likely to do best is when stock markets are weak. And when the stock markets rally, I think that they will often soften. The exceptions to that would be if people feel that growth is slowing and that deflationary fears are rising. But we're not likely to see too many stock market rallies against that background perception. Moving on to the currency markets, the big question here today that everybody is commenting on is, are we, after this period of very narrow ranging for most of the currencies in currency cross rates in the last few months, are we going to get an explosive move one way or another? Well, of course, people in the business are always looking for an explosive move one way or another because that's much more interesting and exciting, and that's where the big profits are made, generally at an acceptable risk if you have good money control disciplines. Whereas the choppy action is hazardous, even though the moves aren't big, that's whipsaw territory, and most people do get whipsawed. So they're hoping for a big breakout. I have my doubts that we're likely to see that anytime soon, but I'll of course be guided by the charts on this. And currently, we are still seeing something of a dollar rally. My hunch is that we've seen the best of the dollar's rally within this rather narrow range, but I can't say that it's over when we have. Okay, dollar yen is at 111.18 right now. That's down 80 ticks from yesterday's close. And euro dollar is at 120.25. The 120 level, a little bit of psychological support there, and there's also a little bit of technical support there as well. But my feeling overall is that the US dollar will be supported somewhat by rising interest rates. But that it's unlikely that we have seen a major low for the US dollar against any of the other reserve currencies. So I look for continued ranging, but eventually some additional weakness, but not an enormous amount of weakness. All that talk of a dollar collapse, well, I've never bought into that theory. And if only because there are too many central banks around that are very, very keen not to see the US dollar fall substantially. And I'm not just talking about the Federal Reserve, which has been very happy to see the rather orderly decline that we've seen in the US dollar, as is the Bush administration and as would the Kerry administration in its place. But we have the demand from China and also from Japan for US dollars. They do not want to see their currencies appreciate that much, and nor does any other country. And as you may recall me saying before in these long-term outlooks, that we don't get the big secular once-a-generation trends in currencies that we see in bonds and stock markets and commodities. mainly because no country could withstand a generation appreciation of its currency against its main trade competitors. And the main trade competitors, of course, are its main trade partners. Now, I've commented on the U.S. election previously. I do think that Kerry will probably win, but it's hazardous predicting predicting elections. It's hazard enough to predict markets, but it's easier to predict markets than to predict something like an election result, which could hinge on an event, and that event, whether that's what the oil price does, bearish for Bush, or whether it's, hopefully it's not something alarming, such as a major terrorist attack. It could well hinge on the debates, but my bottom line view is that the people who want Bush out are more passionate and organized than the people who want to keep Bush in, and that probably the religious rights influence has caused the Bush administration to alienate too many socially liberal but physically and foreign policy conservative types, such as myself, as I said last Tuesday. Now, in comment of the day, of course. Now, moving on from currencies, the most interesting area of the markets, I think by far, remains the supply and elasticity trades. I talked about oil a little earlier on in that new high, and these charts are still trending up. They still look like viable trades, but in taking a very long-term perspective, I do feel, and have felt for quite some time, that all this talk of going back to cheap oil was really wishful thinking. And the main reason for that is that we have limited refining capacity around the world relative to the demand. We have limited pumping capacity around the world relative to the demand. Now, that pumping capacity could certainly be increased if Iraq becomes stable, as we would all hope. Then production there could go from 2 million barrels a day at best to 4 million barrels a day quite easily in a matter of months, quite possibly. And certainly there's scope for increasing production in Russia, and then the development of technology, and with prices at current levels, the exploration that takes place will open up more wells, both on land, enable others to be become more productive through the use of technology, and also more offshore drilling, and so on. So the supply, and not to mention the tar sands and places like Canada. So there's still plenty of supply around, and we can expect more of that supply to actually be tapped. But the demand for oil is growing remorselessly, and all we have to think about is this emergence of a middle class in China, with a very large middle class emerging in China, and with India not all that far behind, and all of these people, of course, want their automobiles, and remember, they're going from bicycles to the scooters and then the automobiles, and they also want their air conditioners and their additional lighting and their refrigerators and so on. So the demand is rising remorselessly, and there's just no likelihood of that ending anytime soon. So I think that we'll see upward pressure more often than not. As far as energy is concerned, that provides a number of obvious investments and also trading opportunities. And supply and elasticity is far greater. Oil, you could really say, has the most elasticity as far as supply is concerned. Metals, quite another matter, despite the recyclable scrap. and demand again from China and other emerging nations, but particularly China, has been absolutely enormous, and that's not likely to end anytime soon. So these various metals, industrial metals, will remain generally firm, but they will be hugely volatile. And then the precious metals are an immensely interesting area. I maintain that gold and, well, all of these industrial, all of these hard commodities, so-called hard commodities, and oil are in secular bull markets, once-in-a-generation bull markets. So these are going to run for many, many years, but I can't emphasize often enough that these will be extremely volatile overall. So we really do need to look to our chart reading skills always. Now, gold is likely to be the least exciting of these bull markets until the very end, when inflationary fears are very much in the public consciousness. We're nowhere near that level. I'm here today, although inflation is gradually picking up overall. And I prefer to play gold through its volatile proxy, which is silver. And again, interestingly, we had a very good day in silver, despite the dollar being a little bit stronger against the euro. Silver was up 30 cents at one stage here today, enabling me to take another baby steps profit. You know, I've been buying it on every dip and lightening on every rally, and I'll continue to do so. And my orders are there with my spread bet dealer, and they'll just continue to operate while I'm away, hopefully helping me to pay for this tour de gourmand that Mrs. Fuller has arranged for me. Okay, not to digress too much. What about the soft commodities? These are much, much more difficult to predict. And one of the, the key reason for that is that there is no supply inelasticity. We get supply shocks from time to time, particularly with the agricultural commodities. A crop can be severely affected by too much precipitation, or too little precipitation, or any, and there could be disease, all sorts of problems. But supply is very much the key variable, and it's much easier to plant another season's wheat or soybeans or corn or whatever, cotton, and then it is to discover new mines, for instance, for metals, and to make those mines viable. But when commodities reach extreme levels, as we saw with orange juice a short while ago, it's pretty much a given that that will end in a very sharp rebound. That rebound may not be sustained, as we've seen with orange juice, but we will see a number of these rallies overall. And if prices are too depressed for too long, then the agricultural sector may well decide to switch to another crop, which can increase the possibility of a major move. The time to be interested in these is when prices are extremely depressed, and to identify a few of those right now, we could say cotton, we could say corn, oats, wheat, soybeans, but there is no clear evidence that these have turned just yet. I know from my conversations with Owen Tracy that he's been watching these more closely than I recently, and I try to keep a pretty close eye on them, and we'll be talking about these overall among, of course, all the other markets while I'm away, because there's quite likely to be a trading opportunity in some of those very depressed softs, if only due to short covering, as we saw with orange juice quite recently. So, exciting times. There'll be plenty of opportunities overall. And again, we will hope to harvest a good many of those opportunities. Again, always relying on our behavioral technical analysis for the timing. Meanwhile, I'm off for just about a month, and I wish you every success and a most enjoyable August. Keep sending those excellent reports that you so kindly send to me, and articles. Keep forwarding those through the email system, and Owen will be picking those up and posting a number of them, if not in comment of the day, in the subscribers forum, and commenting on a number of them as well. And they're all much appreciated and very much in line with one of the Floor Money themes, empowerment through knowledge. All the best.